It's another Saturday morning here on CCO Time once again for a bit of a wine chat with our friend from Haskell's, Ted Farrell. Good morning, Ted.
Good morning, Denny. How are this somewhat smoky morning?
I was going to say it's like me grilling every day here when this stuff happens with the Canadian fires. I bring in that sense of smoke all the time. Yeah, it is. There's an advisory out until Ted Monday morning at 9. So we're stuck with this for another couple days. It looks like day and a half or so. So for some folks it's serious. For others it's just kind of a nuisance. But in the meantime, how are you? And what are we going to chat about today?
Well, I'm doing just fine, Denny. And, you know, what we're going to talk about today is, believe it or not, on Monday, the 14th, is Bastille Day. And Bastille Day is sort of the equivalent of the 4th of July over in France for all of our French brethren and all my buddies in the winemaking industry. They all kind of love to don the red, white, and blue and go out and rebel and do all that. And it's a symbol of what it is. They're remembering the storming of the Bastille. Now, the French Revolution kind of occurred a little bit different than the United States Revolution, but it had a lot of commonalities going on. Originally, they had their three estates. One, they had the royals, was the first estate. The second estate was the church, and the third were all the commoners. And the unfortunate side for the commoners was the simple fact that the two other states kind of voted them out all the time and kind of ran roughshod over them, and they finally got fed up. Now, the Bastille was this interesting fortress, very similar to, say, let's say, the Tower of London, but it was in Paris, and it was originally built in the Hundred Years' War to defend the eastern flank of Paris from whatever invader and whatnot. Over those several hundred years, they built it up and fortified it and got it bigger and stronger. It went from, believe it or not, just being a fortress, and then it was maybe a prison. And so Louis XIV would love to put any of people who objected what he was doing, questioned what he's doing, and they would throw them in the Bastille. So over time, the Bastille had all kinds of famous people living there, as far as the Marquis de Sade. The Man in the Iron Mask was stuck in the Bastille for a while. And so it was this fortress. So also as a little bit of a symbol of, you know, that royal, the royal symbol of power. And eventually, though, it did evolve. It was a prison. And it was also more an armory for the royal armies, as far as guns and gunpowder and all that stuff. And so in and around 1789, the French had had enough. The Third Estate had taken off and sort of assumed power, started up the General Assembly, and they were just sick and tired of what Louis XIV was doing. You know, the crazy thing is there was all sorts of other situations involving with that revolution, because there was a lot of economic problems. You know, the French were in debt like no one's business. And believe it or not, the crops were kind of failing. And the interesting thing is now with some of the research and climatologists and all that, they've looked back and actually found out that, believe it or not, Europe was kind of going through a mini ice age at that time. So the bread and especially the wheat production was really suffering. They were having really long, harsh winters, and they weren't producing nearly as much wheat as they were. And so, believe it or not, they didn't have much bread, and that's what kind of got that was part of the biggest problem. So they had all kinds of economic woes. The Third Estate rose up, and they charged, and they literally charged the Bastille, and it was a little bit of a siege, and they finally got in it. It was more symbolic than it was anything else, because really, you would think maybe they're freeing all these political prisoners that were in the Bastille, but believe it or not, there was only 7 prisoners in there. Nothing to write home about as far as a big victory. But more importantly, what they really did and the reason why they stormed the Bastille was the symbolic nature of it, but it also had barrels and barrels and barrels of gunpowder. So they stormed that up and it started out its revolution. And it was very similar to what we did, but they kind of went in some different directions. They had all kinds of purges and all that. But in order to celebrate that, what we thought we would do is we put together a French Bastille Day 6 for 60 for all of our listeners to sit down and enjoy on that day. So we started out again with a lovely little wine from the Loire Valley, a little Muscadet, and this is the Le Chateau Muscadet. I was walking around the stores and kind of said, hey, wait a minute. I thought we only had one or two, but we discovered this little one in the store, and it's just a fantastic one. And we've talked about it in the past. It's made with the Melon de Bourgogne, but the Le Chateau is nice, crisp, and just a wonderful wine. You know, especially on these warm days that we're experiencing in the next couple perfect summer days, this is such a light, delicious, and refreshing wine. You know, I've always mentioned that this one was my father's favorite to kind of serve with walleye or any fish, but you just don't have to pigeonhole it with that. You could do it with other things as far as, you know, just nice salad, or as the Californians love to say, it's a great porch pounder. You put a nice chill on it, you can sit down just and you drink away. It's not assuming there isn't super structure to it. It's just a nice, classic, great little white wine to have. Also, what we included in there, and this was a little pet project of mine, was called the Haskell's Maison Blanc. Now, this is just a lovely little, we put our own label on it, lovely little white wine. Originally, it used to be 100% Chardonnay, but unfortunately, Chardonnay prices, especially in and around Burgundy, have really skyrocketed. So we had to kind of source around, and we worked with our French winemaking team over in Europe to figure out what we should do, and it's a blend of things like Uni Blanc, Senso Blanc, even a little Claret Blanc in there. So it's a unique wine, but again, a fun little white wine with a good structure, really well made. Again, you can put a decent chill on it, not a super, super chill the way you would the Muscadet, but a nice, pleasant wine, unassuming, and just so drinkable and delicious that it's just a nice reflection of what the French countryside has. Technically, they have to call it a vin de pays, P-A-Y-S, but that just means it's a wine of the country. It doesn't come from a specific region, and that's just an easy way for the French to do the labeling and get it over here to the United States. Next, with these temperatures that we had to include a lovely little rosé. And this is made by the Bouchard family. It's a great little wine, you know, and this is derived from the Pinot Noir grapes. So you get all kinds of great flavorations with this particular rosé. And, you know, the old adage with rosés, there are so many people think maybe you blend a little white wine with red wine, and that's not the case whatsoever. It's the exposure to the skin that pigments the wine to a red or a rosé. So with this rosé, they use the Pinot Noir grape, but they only expose it for maybe about 12 hours or so, maybe a little bit less, but it's a wonderful wine, kind of unripened strawberries in the notes. Just a delicious one. And, you know, with this, I would serve, we actually had some watermelon salad a couple of weeks ago that this little rosé like this just went, just, it was a match made in heaven. And with that, you know, any rosé, you can put a nice chill on it. It's so refreshing. You know, we do have a nice few warm days coming up here in, for the next couple of days, and just fantastic to sit and enjoy. And really, it's universal. You could serve it, you know, if you wanted to, you could do that with burgers. You could do it with steak, or you could just sit again and, you know, enjoy it with a little salad or a grilled shrimp, things like that. It's a great little rosé, and we always push rosé all day, especially in these warm months. It's just wonderful. So then on our tour of France, we brought in a few other wines. One is Bordeaux. Now, Bordeaux, as far as the Revolution was concerned, was a little bit of a tumult area because a lot of the royalty had big estates in and around there, and those changed hands during this period of time. But, you know, there was a fun little place called Tour St. George, and it's the Tower of St. George, great little Bordeaux. Now, this is a blend of Cabernet and Merlot, and I believe it's about 60% Cabernet, 40% Merlot. Now, years and years ago, they didn't have the technology that we have now as far as doing, you know, what the temperatures you can control and doing all that type of stuff. So you kind of had to do make up for any flaws that your wine have by blending. So if your Cabernet was a little bit too austere, you would blend in some Merlot, or just vice versa. If your Merlot was a little bit too soft, round and flabby, you poured in a little bit of Cabernet to blend it out. And that's way it would do. It would allow the Bordelais to make very consistently good wines, keep the quality levels just wonderful. Every year the cépage maybe changes. One year it could be 65% Cab, maybe the next year drop all the way down to 50, depending on what God gives you in the vineyards. But it's a wonderful expression, and there is some complexity there. What you will notice is as you kind of drink away with it, it all of a sudden will change and evolve, where maybe more of the Merlot notes come out, or the rounder flavor, or all of a sudden the austere nature of a Cabernet kind of stands out. But again, that's a great wine that will stand up to everything. We have a couple more guys in there. We threw in a Bourguil, which is from the Loire Valley. This is 100% Cabernet Franc. Now, this one, a little bit on the rustic side. There's a little bit of earth, a little bit of mineral. You know, if you like mushrooms, this is a great wine. Or, believe it or not, really good with, like, your cheese. So if you're kind of wrapping up your dinner and you have a little cheese course out there, this Bourguil is just the way to go as far as just light, or a little bit more rustic, very, very enjoyable. Lastly, what we threw in this, because they're so universal, they're one of my favorites, and I always keep at least four or five bottles of a Côte de Rhône around the house. And this is the Côte de Rhône Mûrier from, again, the south area of France in the Rhône Valley. The Rhône River feeds right into the Mediterranean, but this is a great expression. It's a blend of a little bit of Grenache, Syrah, a little bit of Mourvèdre, but it's a great, great wine as far as, you know, kind of a no-brainer wine. You come home, you throw something in the oven, throw something on the grill, whether it is a chicken, a steak, or whatnot, and you sit and enjoy this wine. It's so great, and it goes well with so many things. But it's a wonderful expression of the Rhône Valley. But, you know, we bundled all these six wines up for $60. But it's, again, a little tribute and a salute to our friends over there in France, as far as they celebrating their revolution, taking off the chains of tyranny, and just in becoming the French that we know today.
Always interesting, especially when you brought up the history about Bastille Day. And I wanted to ask you a question before we run out of time. Does it, and maybe I'm just as guilty, we have such great wine in the United States, and certainly Italy and Australia and New Zealand. But do we, like me, once in a while forget about great wines from France?
Well, we do. We have so many options, really, and you kind of forget it. The old reliable, the old faithful, and so many people kind of said, well, why is it the French wines are so inexpensive? And it's because the French wines, or just wines in France and Europe for that matter, are considered just something part of the table, where here they're sort of considered something extravagant, especially when you're in the restaurants or whatever, but they just see it as a part of the meal and part of the tablescape. But in France, they produce so much wine. I mean, even that Bordeaux region produces as much wine as the entire country of Germany. So they love their wine in France.
Well, for sure, and I guess I've asked a question every so often, I forget, and I'll find like a white Bordeaux at the Haskell's. I'm like, whoa, how come I don't do this more often? So I just wondered about that. Anyway, I know we're almost out of time, Ted, but tell folks who maybe not know, Haskell's, you can find all these great wines, among other things, in a lot of different areas.
You are correct in what we are doing today in all the stores. We are having these six wines open for tasting. If you want to stop in one of the Haskell stores, you can try all these. Try before you buy. And we have a Haskell's in downtown Minneapolis with lots of free parking. We have a Haskell's in Ridgedale Shopping Center. We have a Haskell's in Highland Village. There's also a Haskell's right in Bloomington down in Lowman's Plaza. If you're out on the lake today cooling off, you can stop by Haskell's in Excelsior, pull right up to the dock. We also have a Haskell's in White Bear Lake. If you're going out to the river, stop by Haskell's Stillwater. If you're down south, swing on in right off of 35. There's a Haskell's in Faribault. There's also a Haskell's in Plymouth. And always stop by our Haskell's super cellar up in Maple Grove. They can take care of it. You can try the wines of the world or enjoy this France. And also a reminder to all the listeners out there that there is still a lot of room for our Bacchus beer cruise that will be taking off on the 19th Saturday. 3-hour cruise up and down the river, the St. Croix River. There's a lunch included and all kinds of wines, beers, and spirits to taste.
Now, how can folks find out, if they don't have a chance to write this down now, how can they find out more information about that great trip?
Well, they can always stop into one of the stores or Haskell's.com 24/7. You can just sit and register right up on there and take care of it, and then put on your sailor cap and head out to Stillwater, Denny.
Outstanding. That sounds like a fun time. Ted, always fun. Thanks for everything, and let's do this again next week.
I look forward to that, Denny.
Ted Farrell from Haskell's.